and we are the Nonprofits. I'm your host, Jeff D. Our co-host, host Dennis Lube.
Howdy.
And producer, Russell Glasser.
Hello.
We are live November 6, 2004. And I just want to say, you people let me down.
Big time.
I recall, distinctly recall last episode, distinctly, asking everybody to go out and vote. Clearly, something happened. Something went wrong.
They did, actually. It's just the other guys voted more.
Well, that. And cheated.
Yes. Yes. That, too.
Did we talk about votergasm on our last episode?
Yes, we did.
Did we?
Yeah.
Did anybody besides me actually sign up?
No.
Here on the show?
Not only did I not sign up, but I failed to be in the mood.
Well, I did sign up.
Uh-huh.
And I did not live up to my pledge.
Well, then it's your fault. It's karma.
It was after the fact. I would have had sex if we'd won.
Me too, friend.
All right. So we're in this pulling it back together phase now.
Yeah.
I'm really getting a sense of this. Listening to Air America Radio and talking with you guys here before the show.
Yeah, we've just spent almost as much time talking as we're about to on the show.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, we had a long discussion about what to say. That I'm sure that will all come out as we go through this, but yeah, I know everybody is let down. I know everybody is well, let's just say it, terrified.
Yes,
yes.
Well, you know, somebody on the Alt Atheism News Group mentioned that he felt, you know, the day after.
Yeah.
He felt the same way he felt after watching the towers collapse.
Yeah.
And I kind of had to agree with him because it was like having the rug
analogy.
Pulled out from under you.
Under your reality.
Your faith in humanity is completely destroyed. You know, you're left adrift. It's like, what the hell? And so, yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of soul searching since then. I still can't find one.
but we've got to regroup somehow.
I think it comes down to this, right?
Yeah.
A, leave the country. I don't really see a point
That's
for that.
Surrender, no.
A, it's surrender. B, you know, if things go so badly that we'd need to have left the country in the first place, there's no other place on the planet to go that's going to be safe. We're just delaying the inevitable.
Well, true.
But,
yeah.
But,
of course, we can always hope that the U.S. Army will be stretched so thin by Iraq and the next war we're going to fight.
Right.
That there's no way they could possibly come into, you know, some nice safe haven in Europe.
However, you know, we could say, since there's a lot of parallels between this and the start of Nazi Germany.
No, Godwin's Law.
That you might want... Yeah, 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 I know.
Except it's accurate.
You might want...
God did win.
You know, you might want to get the people like Einstein and stuff out of the country, you know?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know?
Right. Get the brain power.
Get the brain power out before it's used by...
That's not bad. Do
my dad,
by the
do
current
any of
administration.
Us here in this room qualify?
No, I don't think so. I can do propaganda posters. That's about it.
Well, no. My dad, who I've mentioned before, is a fairly well-regarded physicist, is one of the people who's seriously talking about leaving the country. And when I say seriously, I mean... He told me he has a plan to ask somebody in Switzerland for a job.
So basically, anybody listening out there, if you can be used by the current administration to do bad things, think about leaving.
Yeah, and my dad had used the analogy to Nazi Germany, and he said that, you know, back in the late 30s, what people were saying there was, you know, how bad could it get? Because Germany is one of the most enlightened civilizations in the world.
Did you see SafeAmerican.com?
We have a special guest here. Amanda,
who nevertheless won't talk to the microphone.
Bring up a chair and then get close to one of these mics so you can be heard.
Yeah.
We'll get back to your point when you've got a chair.
To be on this show, all you need is a chair.
Yeah. Okay, but see...
I'm not saying I agree with his decision.
Set aside Nazi Germany. Well, crap.
How do you set aside
Nazi Germany? You can't set aside Nazi Germany. I've been sort of thinking about this.
Parallels are too big.
I've been thinking about this, you know, in parallel with, say, the Taliban,
yeah.
Right? Well, the thing about a lot of those Middle Eastern countries is they already have, you know, a live concept in their countries of religious law, right?
Uh-huh.
The whole Sharia law thing.
That existed.
Already, the concept was like there and active, and some people were paying attention to it before the, you know, say, Iraq slid all the way into the pits of, fundamentalist totalitarianism. We don't have something like that, but damn it, when you bring up Nazi Germany, they didn't have that either.
But, and another thing Nazi Germany didn't have is it didn't have Nazi Germany to point to as a comparison.
Well, that's true. Can we vote maybe to suspend the Godwin law?
Yeah, I'm
just
make it
you know reasonable to go ahead and bring up
actually,
Nazi Germany.
Actually,
bring
it's more
Nazi
of a
Germany.
Guideline.
From all I've
Godwin's
seen.
Guideline. So from now on, for the next 4 years at least, we've just decided, the three of us here on the show voted that for the next 4 years. Godwin's law is suspended. You
right.
can go ahead and bring up Nazi Germany in conversation, particularly on the internet, and you don't lose. You don't
right.
automatically lose.
Well, it is more of a guideline, really.
Hi, Amanda. Welcome
Hi.
To the show.
Hi, Russell. Hi, Dennis.
Amanda
Hi.
Is another member of the ACA. And good friend of the show. What did you have to say?
I think that we're very isolated from the perspective that the people of Nazi Germany had, and they were acting... trying to get socialism in preference to kings and emperors. And the same thing is true of the Taliban. They stepped in after communist revolutions had taken place in Iran and Iraq, locally and nationally.
I meant to add.
Well, before worrying about us becoming the next Taliban or the next Nazi Germany, look for the parallels of, are we coming out from under... a totalitarian monarchy?
No.
So I'm not that worried. I'm not worried the jackbooted strangers are going to come to the door.
But here's the thing, you know, all it takes is enough people with the opinion that the government that they had earlier was really, really, really horrible. And as far as the conservatives, the right-wing fundamentalist conservatives are concerned, that is the case.
Yeah.
They think that when Bill Clinton was president, that was the lowest that this country had ever sunk.
They've been whipping their guys into a frenzy for years. They've been saying that there is a culture war against us. And while I don't want there to be a culture war, if a bunch of people declare war on you, then you're at war.
Right.
You don't have a say about it.
Right.
Oh, and by the way, I did some research. We're not at war with Iraq. There's no declared war, right?
Kind of
let me put it that
point.
Way. Yeah, in there. Not a declared war.
Speaking of which, there was another question that came up in our discussions before the show, and none of us here could answer it, so we'll throw it out to the folks in the chat room.
Yeah.
Can anybody out there tell us, have all three branches of government in the United States ever been under the control of a single political party ever before in the history of the United States? Is this new? Because if it's not, that's a ray of hope. Because
right.
we survived it last
Because we
time.
Survived it and
I
came out of it.
I should mention, in case people aren't aware of it, that as we speak, I believe Chief Justice William Rehnquist is still in the hospital.
Yeah.
And while he's one of the more conservative judges, he's nowhere near being
right.
something like it.
You can certainly find somebody more conservative, no problem.
Bush said, when asked who his favorite Supreme Court justices are, he said Scalia and Thomas, which means guess who is next in line for Supreme Court justice. Not to mention that some of the less extremist, some of the more left-leaning judges could go any time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So,
right. So I mean, that
total
just,
control is
given,
not impossible
it's
here.
It's a given that they're going to have total control of all three branches of government. That is a given. Right.
Right.
I just want to know if it's ever happened before, because I don't know.
Do they have control in the Senate?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
In the house.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I keep getting offers from people I know overseas. They want to make campaign donations to the Democrats.
Well, it's a little late now.
No, they thought the Democrats had a good chance.
Yeah.
Well, they'd have Democrats.
So did we.
Have a good chance.
So did we.
Well, and
we
thought so, and they did have a good chance.
Is it legal to take campaign contributions from Germans and concerned Brits?
I don't see.
I don't see why not.
I don't know. I don't know. If it's you know, illegal, then you shouldn't do it, but. Seems to me like we'd scream if they were doing it. Like, for example, if the Saudis were funding a political party in our country,
yeah.
We'd be really upset.
Oh, yeah, we would, man.
Good thing that's never happened.
Yeah, good thing that doesn't happen.
Irony alert. Irony
all right.
alert.
All right, let me do some news, and then we'll get into...
Okay.
Let me do some announcements, and then we'll get into news. National Atheist Ombuds. I have a feeling these guys are going to become a lot more important.
Could be.
Any instances of slurs, defamation, or discrimination against atheists or other non-believers in the U.S. media should be reported to the National Atheist Ombuds by emailing ombuds@atheism.org.
Well, I can't imagine we'll be seeing many of those.
Please remember to include as many details as possible and a news source where applicable. Incidents will be reported to participating national and local non-theist organizations who have agreed to distribute press releases regarding the reported subject matter. I have some additional information on these guys, by the way. If you want more info on the Atheist Ombuds and what they do exactly and where they're coming from and what they have done so far, go to ombudsman.secular.ws.
Can you give us a highlight?
Of what? Of something they've done
so
far?
Done. Yeah.
There was an instance where a professor, I believe at a university in Chicago, was gearing up to teach a course about basically how atheists are all evil. And these guys were involved in the campaign, the letter writing campaign that after that campaign, the college shut the course down.
Cool. All right. Okay then.
Tomorrow, November 7 at 11:30 a.m., the Freethinkers Association of Central Texas, or FACT, based in San Antonio, is inviting the people. To the city of, inviting the public to the City of Comfort for the third annual Freethinker Cenotaph commemorative ceremony for the German freethinkers who founded the town in 1854. This is the same cenotaph that we've talked about in the past that was funded by contributions from atheist organizations, set up in the town park, with permission, all the forms were filled out, the State Historical Society approved the plaque and everything. They got it set up, and before they finished it and put the plaque on and had the big ceremony to inaugurate it, some fundamentalists came along with a crane and picked the thing up and hauled it out of town and onto some private land where it sits today. It has since been replaced with a smaller yet quite nice monument on private property owned by a freethinker family, and that's where this is going to happen. The original monument got ripped down by Christians, and a new one put up. Participants are to meet in front of the Ingenhut General Store. That's where the new monument is. 830 to 834 High Street in Comfort, Texas.
So sadly, it's no longer in a park somewhere. It's right in the middle of what constitutes Comfort, Texas's main street.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. Our people walk by it every day to go to the store.
Cool.
CFI events calendar. Let's see. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow, Just War and Jihad, Violence in Christianity, Judaism, and Islam at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. You can email zminer, Z-M-I-N-E-R, at centerforinquiry.net or go to www.centerforinquiry.net/CSER/event.html for info. I want to also mention they've recently announced that any area student wishing to attend any of the sessions of that conference may simply display their current student ID, and they will be admitted at no charge up to the capacity of the room. Tomorrow, church-state separation, current issues at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Greeley, Colorado. Email sjordan@centerforinquiry.net for info. On the 8th, new religious threats to academic freedom at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Email sjordan@centerforinquiry.net. On the 18th, Darwin Made Me Do It, Evolution and Human Values at the New College of Florida in Sarasota, Florida. Email sjordan@centerforinquiry.net. On December 4th and 5th, Systems of Belief Lecture Series at Center for Inquiry West in Hollywood, California. Go to www.cfiwest.org/calendar/cook2.htm. That's COOKE numeral 2.htm. Okay, let's start with, can we start with good news, or do we want to wrap up with good news? Wrapping up is always dangerous because we never really time the end of the show very well.
Good news. Let's see. Well, how about the Hell House in Hollywood?
Okay.
That's kind of amusing.
What about it?
Well,
there's a Hell House in Hollywood?
Yes. Hollywood's version of Life in Hell closes on Halloween. It's over already. Ending one of the most popular plays in town, a show where stars vied to play Satan, and theatergoers reeled from graphic scenes of rape, abortion, suicide, cannibalism, and loud heavy metal music. Now, you'd think these presentations would be created by some godless heathen. But no. Called Hollywood Hell House, the show is a revival of a deadly earnest morality play written by a Colorado preacher, the Reverend Keenan Roberts, for Christian fundamentalists. It is played as parody in Los Angeles, with, miracle of miracles, not a single word change. With a rotating cast of celebrities, including Bill Maher, Penn Jillette, and Richard Belzer playing Satan, Hollywood Hell House has become the hottest show in town since it opened in August. Audiences are led through 8 rooms brimming with fake blood and gore to show the evils of sin. With scenes of abortion, gang rape, human sacrifice, and a high school shooting, the show is not for the faint of heart. More than a few of the thousands who have seen it have fainted or vomited. Although viewed by most audiences in hip Hollywood as a satire, the show was...
Some projectile vomiting
pieces. I don't know.
Just the actors.
The show was scripted by Roberts to promote a serious sin and go to hell message. We do the script verbatim, to the letter, and couldn't parody it any better than had we written it ourselves, said Maggie Rowe, one of the play's 4 producers. Roberts, who attended the opening night and claimed the Hollywood production was not his material, nevertheless partied with the cast afterwards.
Good grief.
Rowe discovered the work by watching a documentary, Hell House, about a production in Texas. Posing as the director of a youth group, she bought Roberts' Hell House outreach kit, which includes a script and tips on marketing the show. Financed for $15,000, Rowe says most of the money went to buy special effects, costuming, and props. The show runs for 35 minutes and is performed 10 times in the course of an evening. Hollywood Hell House has a devoted following with many repeaters in attendance. As for devout Christians and true believers attending the show, Rose says she did not run into any problems. One night, she had a group of 30 arrived. They were Christians who came thinking it was a real hell house. They thought it was great, but they didn't understand why people were laughing.
So, can we report them to the ombuds?
I don't know.
Or
good point.
Defamation of non-Christians?
Does that show go after atheists? Was that listed in their laundry list of...
Oh, well, pretty much, I would imagine. Any unbeliever.
Probably.
Yes. Yeah.
Russell, you got any good news?
No, I have some funny news.
All right.
Go for it.
Were you going to do that?
Really, Dennis did funny news.
Yeah, I did funny news.
Go ahead.
Same thing. I'm sure most people have heard this already, but A man was attacked and injured after jumping into a lion's den at the Taipei Zoo and trying to convert the lions to Christianity. The 46-year-old man leaped into the den of African lions and shouted, "Jesus will save you," according to the report, and he also said, "Come, bite me," before one of the male lions attacked and bit the man.
Bring it on.
Did he say bring it on?
Because this worked so well in the Colosseum.
Video showed the lion ripping a jacket off the man at the zoo in Taiwan's capital, clawing him and then biting the man in the leg. Zoo workers were able to drive off the lion with water hoses and tranquilizer guns. The lions were fed earlier in the day, otherwise the man might have been more seriously injured or killed. In which case, he would be up for a Darwin Award.
Yeah.
Okay, good news.
I think all Christians should take that up.
Good news. Right. Ready?
Go for it.
Spain is rapidly transforming itself into a secular country.
Good.
Hello.
It's like there's a zero-sum game in the world. We get more, they lose it.
Weren't they the Spanish Inquisition?
Yes.
Yes.
That's a good thing they've changed their mind.
I have long suspected that the reason why Europe is so secular is that they have had their dark ages.
Yeah.
And we haven't had ours.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yet.
Thank you, yes.
So, everybody, you know, just when I say Spain, just imagine I'm saying United States, and you'll feel a whole lot better.
Right.
Since the socialist government under Prime Minister José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero took power in March of 2004, now the government has set up a timetable to cut the state funding of the Roman Catholic Church in half.
Yeah, baby.
A first step on the way towards zero. Up to now, more than 136 million euros, nearly 174 million U.S. dollars, have been annually flowing from the state's coffers into the alms bag of the Catholic Church.
Good grief.
The government also called off an arrangement that allowed Spanish taxpayers to offer a percentage of their taxes to the church. And it established a commission to implement the ban on a ban on crucifixes on public buildings.
Yes.
Although Spain, according to its 1978 constitution, is a non-denominational country, the Roman Catholic Church has been running on state funds and enjoying many privileges, which are now being scrapped step by step. Major changes are being implemented in the educational sector. One of the first acts of the new government was to scrap the education bill approved by the Vatican-friendly People's Party government, which would have made religious education for Spanish school children a compulsory exam subject like mathematics. According to a new draft legislation presented to the parliament, religious education will now be optional. It is planned to offer in addition to lectures on Christian religion, not only Catholic but also Anglican and Protestant, lessons on Judaism and Islam. Now there are 32,000 religious teachers appointed by the bishop and paid by the state via government subsidies. In future, teachers for religion will be regular state employees like all other teachers. There will also be a new compulsory subject in Spanish schools, education in citizenship, aiming at cultivating democratic values. The bishops have already expressed their dismay about what they fear will indoctrinate children against the church.
Aww.
Three more government-drafted legislations were presented in Parliament, which promised to bring Spain out of the shadows of the Roman Catholic Church. The new divorce law will make divorce far easier and faster. The new abortion law will allow abortion within a stipulated time without giving reasons. The new marriage law will give same-sex couples equal legal status.
Way to go, Spain. Now one of the more enlightened countries in the world. Certainly far more enlightened than ours.
Repeat after me. ¿Cómo está usted? How are you? ¿Cómo está usted?
Yeah. So for those of you compiling your list of countries to flee to,
yep.
Spain. Put Spain on your list.
Put Spain on the list.
Spain's move towards secularism makes the bishops see red. Their outcry against the moral degradation of this legislation and about the country's general apostasy? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Apostasy?
not apostrophe, does not have much echo among the population. Surveys show that a strong majority is in favor of the government's planned laws. 72% want to see that the church is left to finance itself.
Yeah.
Though about 90% of the Spaniards are formally Catholics, only 25% are practicing, and few of them are youngsters. The new policies, says Premier Zapatero, are exactly what people have voted for, quote, what the government will put before Parliament is strictly a reflection of what was supported on polling day. Well,
Spain,
that really is also the case here.
Spain, please tell us how you did it.
Well,
please.
They had centuries of religious darkness.
Yeah, but how did they do this?
They were influenced by England. We've celebrated Trafalgar Day, which is the battle between the British fleet, the Navy fleet, and Napoleon's Catholic-backed Spanish and French fleet. And the Spanish were not too happy about being forcibly taken over by the French Catholics. So, subtly and eventually allied with the British.
Did we do the story about the Satanist in the British Navy?
I don't think we did, no.
I think that was just at the time, just after our last
show.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't make a cut on this week's news. Go ahead.
But I don't have the information here in front of me, but apparently there's a Satanist in the Royal Navy, and there's some outcry, of course, among the religious thing there, but it was kind of interesting that their commanding officer came to this sailor and said, do you need any specific paraphernalia? Because it's okay. It's fine. No problem.
It should be okay.
Oh, yeah.
Too, right?
Yeah, it should be.
Religious freedom means any religion is
right.
Okay.
It takes
actual law breaking is not okay.
It takes Britain
that we broke that. See, we crossed that line.
It takes Britain to show us what it's like.
We actually only allow certain religions, and those religions that we do allow are allowed to break laws when it turns out to be, you know,
to their advantage,
to their religious practice.
Right.
Dennis, do you have any actual good news? Not funny news. Anything good that happened in the last 2 weeks worth mentioning?
John Ashcroft?
No,
well, we don't
really
have that story, and it's only a rumor, actually, right? So far,
I
it's just a rumor.
A story that mentions it.
Go ahead.
All right. Although it seems kind of out of sequence because we haven't really had a chance to get on a good discussion about.
Well, you want to hold up?
Horrible thing.
The only thing I've got close is weird-ass science news. But
fine, let's hold off. Let me do my last piece of good news. In defiance of the Bush administration, California voters approved stem cell research. Now, this is all over the news, but let's cover it and have our discussion. California voters approved a ballot measure on Election Day to spend $3 billion over the next 10 years researching human embryonic stem cells, the largest state-run scientific research effort in the country. Unofficial results showed that the measure passed with 59% of the vote. The measure, Proposition 71, was backed by an assortment of wealthy business people, Hollywood personalities, scientists, and Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, a Republican who broke ranks with President Bush and the California Republican Party on this contentious issue. All right. Well, you know, Schwarzenegger himself has been cloned and discovered that he himself was the clone.
That's true.
And fled to another country where he became a freedom fighter.
Good point.
So
good point.
So in 2008, can we expect Arnold to be fighting for implantation of false memories?
Sure.
Sure, why not?
Is that the same movie?
No.
No, a different movie.
But, you know, he might go through.
But he will vote for Skynet.
He was in a cloning movie where he wound up finding out that he was the clone and that he wasn't evil.
Or maybe he'll vote against Skynet. That would be good.
Yeah.
The Skynet passed.
The Bush administration has placed restrictions on using public money for research on embryonic stem cells, citing opposition to the destruction of human embryos by religious fucktards.
Right.
Last year, the federal government spent $25 million on stem cell studies. With the passage of Proposition 71, California will spend $300 million a year beginning in 2005.
Yeah. Go California.
The measure calls for the establishment of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, which is expected to become the nation's incubator for stem cell studies. The state will pay for the effort by using $3 billion in general obligation bonds at an estimated there's some money issues.
Cool.
Though there is a disagreement over the use of human embryos for research, many scientists and patient advocacy groups say they believe stem cells have great potential for deriving therapies and cures for diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Well, and, you know, when it's scientists that are saying that, they're saying that because they know what they're talking about. Okay, that's enough good news.
Okay.
Let's get into it.
Oh, boy.
So,
get into it with
all three branches of our nation's government, well, two branches right now, and a third as soon as Bush gets to replace some Supreme Court seats, are in the hands of right-wing Christian fundamentalists.
That's right. They're the people who voted him in. The primary reason cited by people who said they voted for Bush was moral issues.
I have a story on that. Shall I do that story right now?
We both do, but you go ahead.
Yeah, cross it out.
Oh, that's because you thought I was going to do it.
Yeah, you're going to do it.
Okay. President Bush, and bear in mind, although this is a news story, I kind of regard this as sort of the spin around the election.
Okay.
Yeah. President Bush combined his reputation for strong leadership in a time of war with a campaign about traditional values to win re-election.
Oh, crap. Let me do my version. That's very spun. Religion was the key determinant of voting in the 2004 presidential race, according to an exit poll conducted by the Associated Press news agency. Most notably, fundamentalist and conservative viewpoints ranked private morality as more important than Iraq, the war on terrorism, or the economy.
In other words, things that are real.
Right.
Yeah, instead of things that are real, it's their moral views that they consider the most important. According to the exit poll, 22% of the electorate said moral values were the issues that moral values was the issue that mattered most in how they voted, compared to 20% who cited the economy, 19% who cited terrorism, and 15% who said Iraq was the key issue. Campaigns by organizations such as the Sojourners Community in Washington, D.C. encouraged evangelicals and other Christians to consider poverty, justice, and the war in Iraq as legitimate Christian concerns. However, their calls would appear to have fallen on many deaf ears. 4 out of 5 voters who cited moral values as their key election issue voted for President Bush, as did the same proportion of those who cited terrorism. In contrast, those most concerned about the economy voted 4-1 for Senator Kerry, as did 3-4 of those who cited Iraq as their main concern. During the campaign itself, polls showed a steady rise in the numbers citing moral issues like abortion as the top issue facing the country. George Bush, too, attempted to corner the conservative Christian vote using the last of 3 TV debates with Democrat rival John Kerry to co-opt God to his campaign. So.
Okay. I just want to get into something.
Yeah.
I keep going back to this Ron Susskind article that I mentioned 2 weeks ago on our show. If anybody wants to read it, and you should, it's called Without a Doubt. It's from The New Yorker, maybe 3 or 4 weeks now old. And it's about how I think the central theme of the article is about how a Bush administration official told him, look, you and people like you are part of what we like to call the reality-based community. You think that if you study your little facts and learn things about the world, then you can make better decisions than us. And we just go do what we want because we know that we're right, and your little facts will change tomorrow because we're busy changing the world. In a very strong sense, what happened in this election is that the ability to suppress reality-based thinking won.
Right.
At least for 51% of the country. Because the people who voted for Bush went on so-called moral values, whereas the people who voted for, let's say, the economy,
right.
84 to 15 in favor of Kerry. What they did was, like, misdirect people into not thinking about anything that's really, truly happening, and thinking about some sort of imaginary world where George Bush does things that are moral. Which is why I think we have a lot to worry about with this election, because it's not just a matter of the American people, the majority of the American people making what I consider to be an incorrect choice of candidates, but the fact that they all make their choices on the basis of unreality.
Right.
I mean, I actually heard, you remember how there was this big stink about how Kerry and Edwards kept bringing up Cheney's gay daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I actually read somewhere that there were people out there who were now saying, I heard Edwards has a gay daughter. That immoral bastard. In other words,
yeah.
These people don't even understand what they know.
I want to take issue with this this news story I just read also.
Okay.
Right? Okay, check this out, right? 22% of voters said moral values were the main issue. 20% said the economy was the main issue. 19% said terrorism was the main issue, and 15% said Iraq was the main issue. How is the war on Iraq not a moral issue? In what
right.
sense is objection to that not a moral objection? And, you know, according to them, 15% said Iraq was the key issue, and of those, 80% of them voted for Kerry. That's 12%. Of the voters
right.
voted for Kerry on a moral issue, which happened to be Iraq.
That's what I'm saying, is that people who voted for things that exist here in the real world and not in their head.
My point is, they set aside moral values as if it
somehow
had,
separate.
Yeah, separate from war and terrorism. It's not.
How the hell is that? Yeah.
It is not separate. But you know, that's one of the ways that...
Well...
The thing is, the right wing has co-opted morality as if
yeah.
they are the only ones that have any, and they're the only ones that care about it, and they're, you know, and everybody else is just, you know, amoral lunatics. It's not true. It is not true.
In fact, there's strong evidence that the opposite is the case.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I see is one of the main problems is their use of the media is flawless. I mean, they obscure every issue.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that the voters, all they get, all they hear are a bunch of conflicting stories, each apparently self-serving to whichever side is presenting the story.
Right.
So they can't trust the news. They can't trust either side. So when it comes time to vote, who do they vote for? Well, the only factor they can point at to figure out who to vote for is the guy they already voted for. Is like, you know, I'm a Republican, I'll vote for the Republican.
And if it's when it was a new guy, right, election, when it was new guys, then they looked for something else, right? Some thing they could latch on to say,
right.
well, that
and
guy,
give him
even
a moral
though I can't believe
thing.
Any of the spin, I'll latch on to him because he says he's Christian. He makes a big
right.
deal about wearing Christianity on his sleeve.
And
I'm a Christian.
That's really interesting because
right.
I've actually read an article that says that Bush almost never goes to church.
Yeah.
And Al Franken had a great story about how he asked George Bush about this book of the Bible that he supposedly spent 2 years studying and
uh-huh.
he didn't know what it was about.
Right. Well, okay.
I mean, not that that stuff matters to me, but again, it's about this reality versus non-reality based view of thinking, where if you believe something, that makes it true, even no matter how many facts seem to contradict it, like
right.
Bush is a genuinely religious guy.
Yes, Amanda.
Well, Dennis mentioned that the right wing had flawless control of media. If you look at the states that went largely for Bush, both in the electoral and popular vote, those are the states where the dominant media is the Bible and radio. And it's very easy for them to bat 500 on this because mm-hmm. they own the radio stations, there's no competition, and they own the churches. There's no anti-churches for liberals to go to. There's very, very few radio stations. Most of the people who voted on a fairly emotional basis.
Mm-hmm.
Both the liberals and the conservatives in those states were voting from an emotional standpoint, and they didn't really have much media. They still think that Iraq is the source of the 9/11 attacks. They still
That's
think
right.
all
these
yeah,
like
70, they do. 80% I'll bet they
of
do.
Bush voters actually believe that there was a direct operational link between Bush and Al-Qaeda.
So what are we going to do about
that? So we can call that like the fourth branch of government is information, the media, and they've got that too.
Yeah, the problem is if their influence really was limited to radio and churches, it wouldn't be so bad. But it's not. I mean, there are entire TV networks that they also control, and they have because the Fox network is so successful, all the other networks have fallen in line to emulate them in order to compete. And, so that's
Well, let me at least throw out something a little bit positive out there, which is that I think that the liberal media, which didn't exist before and has been a myth up to this point, finally got off their ass this year. It was a little too late, maybe, but...
But at least we have a liberal
media. Yeah, and I'm not just talking about Air America. I mean, if you look back over the New York Times bestseller list for the last year or so,
right.
I mean, it's dominated by Bush-bashing books. It's full of the Al Frankens and the Joe Connessons and the Molly Ivanses. And the people from Bush's administration, like...
And the Michael Moores.
Yeah, and the Michael Moores. I mean, that movie did incredibly well in red and blue states.
Right.
And so the Czech Republic?
I think it's not beyond hope that there's going to be a counterbalance. And I'd like to say we're part of that, but, realistically.
Well, okay. Somebody earlier mentioned, how this came up. Anyway, we have a problem, though, that the strength of the Republican Party is Christian fundamentalism. And what is Christian fundamentalism? Well, it's the kind of Christianity made up of people who take Christianity most seriously.
Right.
Right? It's important to liberal Christians, right? Their beliefs are important to them. And they get offended if, folks like us come and poke holes in them. Right?
Right.
But it's the fundamentalists who take it most seriously, which means, as a result, the Democrats cannot afford to go after the fundamentalist religious beliefs that are making Bush's power base possible.
Right.
Right? Because if they did that, they would alienate their own liberal Christians.
Right.
I mean, worse yet, I'm very concerned about, fringe fundamentalist Christians that were cozying up to the Democrats then too and being welcomed in because of desperation. So, yeah, this is all horrible, but I think we are at a moment in time where we atheists have something that we can contribute to our nation.
Mm-hmm.
We are the guys that can go after religious beliefs.
Right.
And there's one core religious
Assuming
belief.
Assuming we can do it legally. The situation will not change with RE, the First Amendment.
Well, that's why I'm talking about this, like, our very first show after the election and not, you know,
right.
2 years from now when they pass the Christian Sharia laws, right? There's one core issue that turns fundamentalist Christians into this giant voting block that, you know, if you get them on your side, you've got a huge number of votes.
Right.
And that is absolute faith that they are right.
And by faith you mean certainty.
Absolute certainty that they are right.
Right.
Now, I talked about this in our last episode, how the right-wing strategy seems to have been to demoralize liberals. And that word, demoralize, struck me as very odd when I started thinking about it because, you know, that means, like, make you kind of timid and afraid. What does that have to do with morality? Well, what it has to do with it is being demoralized means taking away your sense that you are doing the right thing.
Right.
And so when the fundamentalists talk about moral strength, they are talking their own moral strength. They're talking about their ability to convince themselves that they are doing the right thing.
Right.
Our job as atheists over the next 4 years has to be to focus solely on the issue of fundamentalist Christian certainty that they are right.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to Socrates.
Okay.
Plato wrote this account of Socrates talking to Euthyphro. And Euthyphro was conducting some rituals for his dead father, I believe. Mm-hmm. And Socrates says, well, you know, how do you know that what you're doing is pious? And Euthyphro says, well, that's because the pious things are what the gods say are pious. So Socrates goes, oh, so what you mean is the gods just made up the things that you're supposed to do to be pious, right? It's just on a whim. It's not really pious. It's just what the gods command. And Euthyphro goes, no, that's not what I mean. It's not just made up. No, it's really, really pious. But, you know, we know that it's pious because the gods tell us. Oh, I see, said Socrates. So what you mean is piety really has nothing to do with the gods other than that they know what it is and right. tell you, right? They didn't, like, create piety. And Euthyphro goes, oh, no. Now, this was about the ancient Greek pantheon, but it has a lot to say about Christianity. This yep. same argument shows that the Christian God cannot be, as far as Christians are concerned, their own God cannot be the author of piety / morality, right?
Right.
He cannot be the guy who's responsible for why things are right or wrong. Because if he just made up the rules of right and wrong, then it's arbitrary. And, you know, if he said murder was bad yesterday, he could say it's good today.
Right.
If he's got that power. And then it's not really, really right or wrong, right? It's just what he says. Or, if the Christian God just knows the difference between right and wrong and tells us, then the difference between right and wrong is something that transcends God. That is true regardless of God.
Right.
And God really has no place in the procedure. He's just a mouthpiece.
Right.
Neither of those views are acceptable to Christians. And they hate that dilemma. They hate that little story, that little bit of wisdom from Socrates via Plato. Because when I looked it up on the internet, I found a whole bunch of websites, like articles on Christian websites trying to debunk the Euthyphro dilemma.
And did they?
No. Let me get back to that. And it's like, you know, I think I was talking about a couple of months ago, I was in a bookstore and I saw this big table full of books attacking the Da Vinci Code, right? There's
right.
this whole, like, you know, little business that's grown up around refuting that particular book. And when you see something like that, you know somebody hit a nerve.
Right. Even with a book of fiction.
Yeah.
So people are writing books to refute a book of fiction.
Right.
Wonderful.
Right.
Boy, talk about now, fantasy-based.
So I mean, this carries some weight. When Christians hear mm-hmm. this, it bugs them. At least Christian leaders, it bugs them enough to write web pages. And enough web pages that, you know, it's like the first dozen on the web were by Christians trying to refute this. It's a big deal.
And what was the refutation?
Okay. The best about the only argument that they had was this. The only way to try to refute this is to claim that it's a false dichotomy. That God making up morality or God reporting some external morality are not the only two options. And the third option that they propose is this, that morality is inherent in God's nature.
Ah.
And then they pat themselves on the head and say, the Euthyphro dilemma misses the point because to Christians it's nonsensical. Goodness is not, you know, made up by God. Goodness is not reported by God from some outside source. God is goodness.
Right, and yet
right.
these are
sounds
the,
profound.
These are the very people who practice buffet table Christianity.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, but ultimately, all Christian responses to things like the Euthyphro dilemma, the problem of evil,
mm-hmm.
right? All of those defenses are of this nature. It's to complicate the issue, to push back the question one more step.
Right. To redefine words so that you can't follow what they're saying. Yeah.
Right. In this particular case, all they've done is they pushed it back a step. To expose how fallacious their defense is, you just go, okay, where did God come from?
He always was.
If the God, they say he always was, but, you know, if he always was, if he just exists and, you know, had no direct control over his own nature,
yeah.
then whatever it was outside of God that determined what his nature is right,
is the author of morality.
That's the author of morality, because it's the author of his nature, if God's nature is what is, you know, it was what defines
right,
right and wrong. Whereas, if God somehow created himself, then he created his own nature. And if he created his own nature, he is the author of this arbitrary set of things
right.
that are going to be right and wrong.
Right.
And you could change it tomorrow, and it doesn't really mean anything. The reason I bring this up is, you know, with fundamentalist Christian certainty as, like, the main central factor, but, you know, vastly bigger than anything else, explaining Bush's victory, not including, you know, voting fraud, which is still being investigated.
Right.
That's got to be our target.
Yeah.
I want us going after that. The Euthyphro dilemma is a weapon. It's a single ironclad argument that, if we hammer on it for 4 years, maybe, no certainty here, but maybe we can wake some fundamentalists up and get them to see that maybe they can't really be absolutely certain of their beliefs.
I don't think that will happen, as optimistic as I'd love to be. Jeff, I think what you've said is very reasoned, but I think that we're already at the point where much of fundamentalism is driven from faith, as in, what I've heard right. is right by definition. Yeah.
Right.
And the only defense at this point.
Already put in it.
No, that, yeah. that is
the
true.
Only, the
that
only
is
defense
true.
At this point is
not.
Argument from shut up, which is, you say, you know, the Euthyphro dilemma points out that in Christianity or in Zeus worship, this morality from a deity is arbitrary.
Uh-huh.
And then they go, shut up.
I am not suggesting that this is a powerful argument that once Christians hear it, they
right.
will all
they
throw
will
off
all
the chains of superstition and become rationalists. Not suggesting that at all. I am suggesting Bush won by a narrow margin, and that narrow margin is mostly composed of fundamentalists who are mostly driven by this sense that they are absolutely right. And that is the thing we have to go after. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but then my question is, short of leaving the country, what do we do? Because we cannot expect a bigger voter turnout next time, and we cannot expect the balance to shift away from conservative fundamentalist toward liberal without doing something.
Then
how else are
we going
do
to
it?
Have to study these things. We are going to have to be the authorities on the Bible that many of us don't want to because it's that heinous of a document. We are going to have to say very harsh things. The Euthyphro dilemma was a questioning of the Greek gods' practice of raping mortal women. Well, how is the impregnation of Mary anything less than rape? And
yeah,
very few
one,
Christians
one
will recognize
like
God
say.
Raped a 14-year-old girl.
One thing I always like to say to drive the point home is if God asked you to kill your son, or if you heard voices in your head of God asking you to kill your son, would you do it? I'm not sure whether most people answer yes or no, but the fact is a lot of them deny that God would ever do something, would ever ask for something.
But then they're refusing to answer your question.
Yeah. Right. But that's not something I made up. It's an actual story from the Bible.
And that is related to the Euthyphro dilemma. I agree with you, there were a bunch of really great arguments, right? I know them all. I know all the really great arguments against Christianity in general. The problem is, that's what we've been doing. And I don't think the shotgun approach is working. I think what we need is a concerted effort to go at one issue that is the central issue that this whole thing hinges on.
And they don't really
that
have
is
a response.
It.
I don't see it as a central attack that they've been making, though. The conservative
No, it's not.
Well,
it's not that they've been making
the
an attack.
The conservative attack on our government has been a shotgun attack. Let's attack gay people. Let's attack abortion. Let's attack all these different issues at the same time. And the way that liberals can triumph.
Why are they doing it?
The only way liberals can triumph is that we have to be liberal in many ways, in different areas, all at the same time.
I agree with that, too. I remember you and I were talking the other day about marriage, right? And about we have some friends who emailed us outraged at the outcome of the last election, particularly the measures that passed in so many states
right.
against gay marriage, and they are
Did
seriously.
Did we decide it was 10 or 11 states?
The last news story I've got said 10, but I've seen 11 and I've seen 9, so I'm confused. But these guys said they are seriously considering getting divorced and then having a civil union in order to make a political statement of removing religion from their relationship.
You know, those words civil union
cool.
send a deep chill down my back, because when I first heard the word civil union, it was applied to a state of matrimony that was permitted in some more liberal southern states to black people because property can't get married. And now we're saying two men or two women can't get married, but they can have this special thing that's almost as good as a marriage.
Yeah, Christians didn't make up marriage. People
no,
were
right.
getting unionized, and I think there's no reason. I don't think there's any reason not to call it marriage for thousands of years before this Bible crap came up.
Mm-hmm.
The classical state of marriage wasn't determined by Christians. In fact, there was a very specific act of the church in the Middle Ages where they declared that from now on, no marriages are legitimate unless they're recognized by the Catholic Church. I can't remember the name of it, but I mean, up until that point, there was no assumption that the church had to marry people.
Yeah.
The church passed an edict saying you're only married, and this was at the point when church and state were basically the same thing.
Right.
They said you're only married if a recognized Catholic official declares that you're married. So when they say, you know,
they usurp that,
why don't you just call it civil union instead of hijacking this religious thing that is marriage? They're the ones hijacking it.
Al Franken has had on his show this guest who's a liberal minister. Name escapes me at the
Tony
moment.
Tony Campolo.
Is that the guy?
Yeah.
Like this kind of...
He's evangelical but liberal. That's what you're...
Drives me frickin' crazy. I hate that guy. Because whenever Al, like, actually says something to him that is relevant to the question of whether Christianity is right or wrong, he makes a joke and laughs it off. He will not confront the actual issues. But that guy his suggestion is that the government should get out of the marriage business and be in the civil union business. And anybody should be able to have a civil union, and if churches want to solemnize a civil union, they can do that and call it a marriage. All right?
Why don't we call church wedding civil union?
Because that's not civil. That guy drives me crazy, but I actually kind of like that suggestion.
It's kind of like the same... It's like you're throwing the church a bone and say, oh yeah, go on, take that, no problem. We'll do our civil unions here and you can do your own little thing.
Poland. I'm sure you want to go to any other countries.
Right.
Well, there's that. But Russell, I recognize the historical background of all this, but what matters, I think, what is really important, I think, now is, you know, us now and what these words mean to us now. I don't particularly care that civil union used to be a thing they made up so their black slaves could get married. But what, you know, Amanda, I don't particularly care that that's the origin of that. And I don't care that the origin of, you know, the idea that marriages are performed by the state but have to be solemnized by the church came from some historical thing the Catholic Church did. I don't really care. What I care about is people's rights. I don't care so much what we call the thing.
Well, think about what the rights mean. The rights mean that people within the same household who are sharing income, raising children together, have some legal protections and have some patterns that society is willing to recognize, like giving them insurance, giving them a tax break.
Yeah. That's
giving
what matters.
Partners the other stuff when the other one dies.
That kind of stuff is what matters, right? The ability of any consenting adults to form a partnership and live together and share finances and share responsibility for child rearing. And
be a team.
Not have child rearing, share the responsibility for a business they run together if that's what they want to do. I don't care what it is they do together. I care that they be able to form these partnerships and have it recognized by the state.
It's a bigger deal than that, because if you give gay people the right to marry, you're also giving them the protection that they sometimes want against each other in the case of a divorce.
Yeah.
You know, somebody takes all your stuff.
Right. There's some legal structure there that it all fits into.
This is good for the economy. This is good for the country.
I agree.
Helping people to live together.
Now, when Amanda and I were talking about this, we're talking about the church solemnizing a union, and I said, it occurred to me, I don't want marriages solemnized. I don't want marriages solemn. I want them to make sense, and I want them to work, and I want them to be happy. Right?
Right.
Solemnization is something you do when you want to clamp down a set of specific rules.
Right.
All right.
Solemnizing is something you do when you want to bring in God.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, there can be solemn things that aren't God things, but yeah. But sure. What, you know, I'd like to see organizations liberalizing marriages. I'd like to see ceremonies where somebody takes the partners and says, okay, now you understand what you're doing here. You're getting into this long-term relationship with this person or these other people, and whatever it is you folks decide is okay within your working group there is fine. What's not fine is for one of you to say, well, because I have a penis, I'm the one who gets to decide everything.
All right.
You know, or because you're the one with a penis, it's okay for you to go off and have sex outside of this union without the permission of your partner. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff. Or if they both have penises. Or all three of them have penises. The point is, you know, a marriage should be about that group of people figuring out how they're going to live together and all of them be happy. That's what it should be about.
Right.
And that's liberal. That's not conservative. That's not solemn. And it's not imposed by some ancient manuscript from 2,000 years ago.
Okay. So back to you, Thyfro.
Isn't marriage a conservative thing? Isn't the liberal thing to do to live together and not get married?
But why are they living together and not getting married? Because the structure that's set up for marriage is so heavily influenced by ancient traditions that they don't want to live under. You would have a lot more marriages, or civil unions, if we're calling them civil unions, if what we had was a legal structure for groups of people, groups of consenting adults to form together in, you know, and for a long-term working relationship, and it was approached that way. It would say, oh, well, when we're forming our group, we can live however we want, as long as we're all happy with it? Great.
And of course, that could include, as soon as we're tired of it, we can stop. When they turned out to vote for these resolutions.
That's right. They're afraid that other people are going to be able to live together the way they want to.
Well, but see, I mean, this doesn't address the problem, which is what they're ultimately afraid of isn't that gay people will have a word that they can pin on their union.
Yeah.
What's getting them mobilized to the polls is the fear that they'll be able to do what they want. And
right.
So we still have this problem.
The reason why they're afraid of it. Right?
Because they're bigots.
Is because they think there is a certain set of rules that you have to live by, that they're absolutely certain of, because God said so.
Mm.
And what they don't want, what they're afraid of, is they're afraid of living in a country that doesn't follow by the rules they are sure are the right ones. That's what they're afraid of. So they're taking over the country to make the country follow the rules they are sure are right.
To reinforce their certainty.
To exercise their certainty.
Mm-hmm.
This is why the UFIFRO dilemma is so important. I think if there is any argument atheists need to be making loudly and publicly for the next 4 years, it's this one. We've just got to pop that bubble of certainty.
Don't really have a response to it.
Well, there are a lot of arguments they don't have a response to. This is the one that is central to the problem we're facing now.
Right.
It goes directly at this certainty that God can be the guy that says what's right and what's wrong.
Hmm.
The Democrats can't make this argument, and so they're going to lose.
Don't all religious people still pretty much believe that?
Yes, and that's why it has to be atheists saying it and not liberal Christians, because they ain't going to.
But, I mean, are you going to get some of Bush's base away from him by saying that? I mean, because they're all going to say, well, I don't care what arguments you make, because they're faith-based. I don't care what arguments you make. I know that my God is the central figure of morality, because that's what I've always been told.
To the extent that's a problem. That's going to be a problem no matter what we try to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the only thing to do is pick the right target. And if we can only shift 1% of them, well, that probably won't be enough. if we can shift 3% of them, that would make a huge dent.
That's true. The next guy would win. Or
so, you know, I am open to other suggestions. I would like to move out of the United States. I really would. But, you know, I can't.
Well, okay, so the three branches of government are taken here. What do we see as the way out of it? What scenarios could lead out of that?
I say continuing to take over the media is going. I mean, the media is considered in some ways the fourth branch of government, and I think that being in the information age, where basically spreading information to huge numbers of people can be free. The ability to spread memes, like the Euthyphro Dilemma, is easy.
Right. But unfortunately, all those points can be obfuscated is also easy.
But
they've shown that they've been experts at that.
Here's the thing. For years, we've been taking the shotgun approach, you know, criticizing whatever wacky bit of religion strikes our fancy at the time, or whichever one we happen to run into at any given moment. We're all over the place. We're not organized, and it's not a concerted effort. We need to do this in an organized way. Russell,
yes.
You probably know how to do this. I want to reserve euthyphro.com.
Did you check that it's...
I haven't. And if we can't do that, then I want to do euthyphroproject.com. Okay?
Right. Well, okay.
You'll pay for it. Sure.
I'll pay for it.
Yeah, all these things we're talking about take resources. You give a T-shirt.
And everybody
you have a radio station.
You know, sorry,
it takes money.
Euthyphro Design. Home and business renovation.
Awesome. Do Euthyphro Project. Everybody listening to this show, here's what I'd like you to do. Go on the web, go to a search engine, type in Euthyphro. Okay, we're going to reserve that. Don't reserve Euthyphro Project. We're going to agree with ourselves here in a few minutes.
Dude.
I know you're not supposed to do this, but none of our listeners are going to give us a problem.
Well, we can do it right after the show if you want.
We can do it right now if we really want.
Let's see how easy it is to do it.
It's Euthyphro. Get a pencil. I'll repeat that. Euthyphro. Look up that word and get on the internet and read. And shake your head in amazement at the kinds of pathetic defenses that the Christians have put up against this thing. Familiarize yourself with the argument and with the lame defenses. Email me if you find other defenses that Christians have raised against this thing, right? You can email us at, what is it, nonprofits@atheistsecondcommunity.org?
I think so, but just go to the nonprofit's homepage.
Go to the nonprofit's homepage.
atheistnetwork.com/nonprofits.
atheistnetwork.com/nonprofits, right. And you can email us from there with suggestions on improving the argument, things that Christians have said to try to defend against it, why they're wrong, what's wrong with them, and how you would respond. And if you can, write something. Put up your own website. Let's get a lot of information out there on the web.
And link to the Euthyphro Project site.
And the Euthyphro Project site will be the central clearinghouse. Now, I'm going to go to other atheist organizations and try to get this to be, a bigger effort. But this is where we start.
Okay.
We have 4 years to try to, sway.
Well, two, really, if you think we can make a significant dent in Congress.
There's no reason not to start immediately.
Right. I would like to pass along something.
Yeah?
Well, we talk about Air America Radio, and while we don't want to detract listeners from the fine, fine programs at Atheist Network,
right.
We continue to talk about it because it's quality programming that's enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah.
The morning show not the real, real early morning show, but the show immediately preceding Al Franken is called Unfiltered. And every day they do something called the Unfiltered Talking Point, which is the, which is something that's worth telling three friends. Philosophically, I'm kind of revolted by the concept of talking points because, you know, things that you just repeat blindly are the stuff that spam and urban legends are made of. But
a talking point doesn't have to be made up bullshit that you don't understand.
Yeah, and I think that the Republicans for years have been making such effective use of talking points that we ought to recognize that it's the power of the meme.
Yep.
That gets across to people. Something short and easy. So I'm going to repeat Friday's talking point and therefore, tell many more than, hopefully a lot more than three people. Pass this along. Mandate my ass.
Now what do you mean by that?
Okay. The Bush people are going around.
Are you suggesting men should not that people should not date men?
Wouldn't that be they should?
Yeah, for a bunch of
date my ass.
Man,
I get it.
For a bunch of homophobes, they sure do talk a lot about this man date stuff.
Okay.
You were saying.
The thing is, what the Bush people are saying now is that they have not only won the election, but now they have a mandate to do whatever they want. And what they mean by that is that they actually won the popular vote this time, which, if you think about it, is an incredibly low bar to set for being a successful candidate.
And an incredibly hypocritical position.
People will go around telling you that George Bush got the most votes of any presidential candidate in history. Now, that's true. But you know who got the second most votes of any presidential candidate in history?
Who?
John Kerry.
Oh, there you go.
John Kerry stole my shoe.
John Kerry got more votes than Clinton, more votes than Bush won, more votes than Bush got the first time around, and more votes than their beloved Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
The entire country is not standing behind George Bush. Half the country still detests him, and there's no sign that Bush is going to stop. I mean, he said right after his reelection, he said, "I've acquired some political capital in that last election, and I intend to spend it."
Well, so what that means is he went from not actually winning to actually winning, but only by the narrowest of margins.
Bush won by the smallest margin since Woodrow Wilson, which was in the 18.
Yeah.
And that's a mandate.
That is
my
not a
ass.
Mandate. So tell people that when you hear anything about a mandate, mandate my ass.
I want to respond to Rude Boy in the chat room. Yeah, all that stuff about John Adams and history and all that stuff. You know, the fundamentalists have heard that before. They're not listening.
What about it?
Huh?
I'm missing it.
I mean, Rude Boy's bringing up some entirely valid stuff that, in my opinion, won't sway anybody's opinion. We tried that. We really need a new strategy. And we're atheists here. Our job should not be reminding people of secular history necessarily, because anybody can remind people of history. Our job ought to be being the guys who have the freedom to show that the religion has not got any clothes on. I just mixed metaphors there.
Right,
sorry.
But it works.
All right.
Well, the Statue of Justice has clothes on now, thanks to John Ashcroft.
All that stuff is important. And by the way, I'm not suggesting don't be involved politically. I'm not suggesting stop having other arguments with Christians about other issues. That's all still important and valid. It's just that all of that together didn't make a dent. I think we need to be taking a particular focus on this one issue that may be able to wake some people up. That's all I'm saying.
Well, people are now asking about your John Kerry stole my shoe. I don't get it, says Brian.
The shoe thing is from a parody commercial, a parody of the Swift Boat veterans ad that they played on Air America. It was the not so swift boat veterans, and it was these retarded sounding, dumb sounding guys saying what was wrong with John Kerry.
John Kerry bad.
John Kerry bad.
John Kerry stole my shoe.
All right.
It's too bad we don't we haven't worked up the capability to play clips like they do. I mean, I haven't figured out the technical aspects of that. Losers. Since I'm already running this through my computer, it's hard to run my computer back through the broadcast.
Anybody else got some news you want to do? We didn't get through that much.
Well, I got the vile, killing.
Yeah, let's do some stuff to get atheists angry. How's that?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's just not enough of that.
Right. Shall I?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
Because I got one after you.
Death results from debate about God. A Taylor, Michigan police dispatcher took the call at precisely 12:44 p.m. on October 18th. 49-year-old man said he just blasted a man with a revolver and a shotgun because the man said he didn't believe in God. The dispatcher said the alleged shooter told him he just shot the devil himself and was still armed and standing over the body of the 62-year-old victim in case he moved. "I want to make sure he's gone," the alleged shooter told the dispatcher. The dispatcher asked the suspect how many times he shot the victim. "Hopefully enough," was the suspect's reply. When police arrived at the 1500 block of McGuire, they could see the victim seated on a living room couch with major trauma to his head. They were certain he was dead. He was. Lying on the hallway floor was a black 12-gauge shotgun. Two spent shotgun shells lay on the floor nearby. Later, police found a revolver with five spent cartridge casings. On his way to the police station, the suspect told police he did not want to deal with anyone that did not believe in God, according to the report. The report also indicated that the suspect and the victim knew each other, although the relationship was unclear. The suspect said he was an Eagle Scout, the report said. The suspect said the victim had told him there was nothing he could say that would convince the 62-year-old to believe in God. Following this discussion, the suspect said he went to another room and removed his shirt, then he shaved his face. He tried once more to convince the victim to believe in God, but this time he had the shotgun. "How long would it take you to believe in God?" the suspect said he asked the victim. "Not until I hear Gabriel blow his horn," the victim allegedly replied while tipping his hat. That's when the suspect shot him. "I did it because he is evil. He was not a believer," the suspect told police. The suspect said the victim has been locked up most of his life. Michigan Department of Corrections record indicates the victim was on probation for a drug conviction. At the police station, the suspect commented that he believed there is a God. Then looking at the floor, he seemed to have second thoughts. "Maybe there's not," he said.
A little late for that.
Yeah.
Okay, important safety tip. When arguing with a Christian who then goes away and takes off his shirt, shaves his face, and comes back with a gun.
Right.
Agree with anything he says.
Right.
You don't have to mean it.
Important safety tip.
You can say, here's a great argument you can use. You can say, "Wow, well, if you're willing to pick up a gun for your belief in God, then you must really know what you're talking about. I'm
right.
convinced.
Yeah.
Help me, Jesus, please, here, let's get down on our knees and pray." Say all that stuff. Do that before letting him blow your head off with a shotgun.
This is the wrong time to point out this is an appeal to force fallacy.
Yeah. You'll be right, but your brains will be splattered all over the living room floor, and that's not worth it. Russell, are you going to need one of these?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you, Dennis. More religious craziness that should make us angry. And boy, you know, isn't that exactly the sort of thing we've been expecting
for a long
time? And you very rarely actually hear a story of, you know, some, there's some punching and pushing and shoving and yelling and broken bottles and things. Usually doesn't go that far. Well, things might be a-changin'. Falwell had some comments about terrorism recently.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to terrorists, America should, quote, blow them all away in the name of the Lord.
It's that Christian
unquote,
love.
Said television preacher Jerry Falwell on CNN. According to a transcript of Sunday night's CNN Late Edition with Wolf Blitzer, Falwell, pastor of Thomas Road Baptist Church in Lynchburg, Virginia, defended the U.S.-led war on Iraq. And he said we should kill all the terrorists in the name of God.
And just remember that in their eyes, anyone who disagrees with with a wartime president is a terrorist.
Yeah, so be careful. But let's go get them. See you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.